And we're holding Article 4, Dalit Omud Beis, four lines from the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And we started talking about the dinim of if a woman comes and says her husband is dead, when we believe her and when not. One thing we pointed out is that there can often be a problem, what's called that the Gemara calls bidid dummy, which means that she assumes me'omid liba, as Rashi explains it. So even if she didn't actually see him dead, she thinks that there's such a high likelihood that he is, that she's going to come and say that that's the case. So we talked about, for example, when there's when she's saying that he died in war, or when Rava had gone through different stages of thinking, what if she says he died during a famine? That in many cases she may actually not know 100% for sure that he's dead, but be assuming that under the circumstances that there were, surely he has to have died. So the Gemara continues.
It doesn't necessarily mean that she doesn't like him.
So it doesn't mean necessarily that she doesn't like him, but that she's going to assume that under such circumstances, how could he possibly have lived? Right.
She wants to move on.
Yeah. So the Gemara continues. When she says that he died in a collapse of buildings, so either Rashi says an individual building collapsed, or there was a hurricane or a tornado or something, and many houses were knocked down, or an earthquake or whatever. So that's also like a mochama in the sense the amr b'didami, that she's going to assume that there's a good chance that he's dead. So if she doesn't find him afterwards, she's going to assume most likely he died in the rubble. And therefore, not necessarily can we take her address at face value. Similarly, if there was an epidemic of snakes or scorpions that were going wild and killing people, same thing. It's also like a war. Because again, she may assume how could anybody survive? People are being bitten all over the place. He probably got bitten and killed as well. On the other hand, now we talked about at the very end yesterday that in most of these cases. So if she just says he's dead is one thing, but if she says he's dead and I buried him, then according to most of the Rishonim, we would believe her, because that far she wouldn't go to lie. On the other hand, the Rambam says that even Mesfa Mohamo Kvartiv, we wouldn't believe, only if she says by a famine, for example, Mesfa Kvartiv, would we believe her, and a lot of the Rishonim. So that's one possibility, is she may think it was him and really it was somebody else. Another consideration, good morning, Agamasha. Another consideration is that in wartime and in these other things that we're talking about, she herself is in a panic to get away. So how likely is it that she actually went and buried him when she herself is exposed to danger? Tosfos, in fact, points out that further on we're going to talk about in the Gemara, let's say where they were attacked by bandits. There, she's actually likely to be, as the Gemara is going to say soon, more safe than he is, because for various reasons, as we'll talk about there, they're less likely to kill her. But when it comes to war, for example, and you have arrows or bombs or what have you falling indiscriminately, what's the likelihood that she's stuck around to bury him? So that might be, so some of the Nosekelim and the Rambam say, that might explain why in war, even if she says, I buried him, we don't believe her. Anyway, so we're saying that a couple of these other things are also like war in that sense. And again, according to that Svara, it follows also. For example, when you have buildings collapsing, again, she's likely to get out of there as soon as possible. How likely is it that she's actually sticking around to bury her husband? And same thing when there's Nechoshim Vakrabim around and about. Continues the Gemara. Dever, what if there's an epidemic? What if there's a plague going on? Amrila Hareu Kamocham of Amrila Eino Kamocham. Some say that it is considered like a mochama in that regard, and therefore we don't believe her, and because we say it's dummy. But amila ino kamochama. Others say that no, that if she says that he died, that there was an if there was an epidemic, and she says he died during it, then we can take her at her word. Amila habeu kamochama da amibid dummy. So the ones who say consider it like a mochama, again, she's likely to think, well, if he got this disease, he probably died of it, just as many other people do. But others say that not. Because they say that we can rely, or she herself is likely to rely on the expression that people say, Shev Shnin Havam Lesana, there may have been an epidemic that went on for 7 years, the Enish Boy Shni Lai Ozel, but nobody died prematurely. In other words, yeah, there's an epidemic. People are dying. But each of those people had lived out the amount of years that Hashem had established for them. Now, in fact, it's not always the case. We actually learned in Chagiga a couple of months back about a story involving the Malach HaMavis, whose assistant took the wrong neshama, and the Gemara gets into a whole discussion of how that could be. But be that as it may, you do have sometimes, of course, in such things, people do die prematurely. But the point is, she knows that, but the point is, given the popular expression, and there is a certain amount of truth to it, because after all, Hashem is the one who determines when people live and die, so therefore, just because there's an epidemic doesn't automatically mean that she's going to assume, well, my husband caught the disease, or he was in an area where it was very prevalent, or whatever, therefore he must have died. Not necessarily, she may be careful enough that she's not going to say anything unless she actually saw him dead with her own eyes. Okay. So now the question is, you boil
the
So an epidemic. No, so in an epidemic might be the equivalent of Shalom Ba'olam, where even she just says that he's dead, might be good enough. But certainly if she says that he died and I buried him, that would certainly be good enough, yeah. So Iboilahu, so now we have a question. Now, we're talking about in the Mishnah, and so far we've been discussing, if we know already, we already got the news, and we know that there's a Mohammed going on in such and such a place. So now she comes and says, so we didn't know where she and her husband were, for example. She comes back and tells us, my husband was in Ukraine, and he got killed in the war. Where we already know there was a war going on over there. What about what if we b'chlal didn't know that there's a war going on over there? So they traveled to, I don't know, Yehopetzville, and we didn't know, we didn't hear anything about there being a war over there. And she comes back and says, there was a war there, and my husband got killed in it, or died during the wartime. B'chlal is a discussion among the Shonim when we say that he died in Mohammed, and we say that we don't necessarily believe her. Is she talking about that he got killed on the battlefield, or are we talking about he died in bed of injuries during the war, or whatever? Anyway, so Mahu, then what do we say? Mia minin malal shaker. Do we say, what does she have to lie? In other words, she has a kind of migri. The boya on the shalom ba'olam. She could have after all said that it was peaceful over there, and we would have believed her. Or maybe once there's already a chazaka that there is a war based on what she said. So then we have the problem that she might say the dummy, that she might assume that he's dead when really he's not. So Malu Shaka can't undo that chazaka. Now, first of all, Rashi explains that now in our Mishnah we said that if it says Shalom Ba'olam Ne'emenis, so then on the face of it, so yeah, then the answer is that if as far as we knew there was Shalom in the world, then we would believe her. So now Rashi explains that no, when she says, the whole point is, when our Mishnah is saying that if there was Shalom Ba'olam and she says Mes Baili, we believe her. But if she says that there was Mohammed in the world and she says Mes Baili, then we don't believe her. So the point is, it has to be, Rashi says, that we're talking about that she said there's Mohammed. So we would say like this. We would argue that either way. Now Rashi learns that when we said before that even when there's Mohammed in the world, if she says he died naturally, we would believe her. We only don't believe her when she says he died as a result of the Mohammed. So in that case, wouldn't that answer our question? Obviously, we have to be talking about when she's saying he died in bed. So what's the problem? So Rashi says that no. What the Mishnah means is if she just said he died. So now, since we knew there was a Shalom in the world, whether she said Al Mitase or not doesn't matter, because it means that he died naturally in bed. When there's Mohammed in the world, then by default, if she says he died, we assume it means in Mohammed, unless she says Mes Al Mitase. The question we have over here is, as far as we knew that there was Shalom in the world, now she comes and tells us that Mes the Mohammed. So now the question becomes, on the one hand, she has this migri, because we only know of the Mohammed through her. On the other hand, the fact is now we know there was a Mohammed, and once she says there was a Mohammed, and she just says, Stam, he died, or she says that he died in the Mohammed, then we don't necessarily believe her, because we have the problem of Bididun. But in other words, so it comes out from what that... So one second. So now, how can you say migui? So Tosfos says, one second, then what kind of a migui is this? So Tosfos says that since she was medayik so much, since she went to the trouble of telling us that there was mochama in the world, and she's giving us the details, that shows that, so it's not, in other words, Tosfos says it's not a regular kind of migui. A regular kind of migui is, instead of saying A, she could have said B, which is a better argument.
Yeah.
Here it's more along the lines of that the fact that she's giving such details, and she's telling us that there was Mohammed where without her we never would have known of it, then that shows that she's trying to be precise, and we don't suspect that she's doing the dumb, that she's So on the other hand, so when we know of the war independently of her, then we don't necessarily believe her, that mess by the Mohammed, because she could have said mess on the Tasse, that's not a migri. As long as we know that there was a Mohama, she's afraid to say mes amitase, because that could be, because come on, how likely is it that mes amitase, that he died a natural death in the middle of a war? But when she herself told us about the war, then we can assume the very fact that she's telling us about that shows that she's medayik. A couple of the Rishonim explain the vote a little bit differently. They say, after all, she doesn't have to lie at all. All she has to do is tell us, my husband's dead. We didn't know that there was a war in that country, Bechlal. So when she tells us that he's dead, we would assume, like Rashi says, that it means there was no Mohammed over there when he died naturally. So therefore, the very fact that she's mentioning that there was a war, there is, in effect, a kind of migri that she didn't, it's not that she would have had to lie. It's not like if we asked her, so what were the conditions over there, she would have to lie and say it was peaceful. She didn't have to say anything at all. She could have just come and said, we just came back from a trip, my husband's dead, and we didn't know that there was a war there, Bechlal, and she's not lying. So therefore, the fact that instead she tells us that there was a war over there, and that she tells us that he died, might be reason enough to believe her. But on the other hand, the fact is, now we know there was a war there, and once there's a war, then we have the problem of Bididah. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof. A Braisa says, if she comes and says, Ishinu Aleinu Bayis, Ishinu Aleinu Ma'ara, that they set a house or a cave on fire and smoked us out, and she's saying then, so that the place was full of smoke. I managed to get out of there, but he stayed in there. Who messed on Initzalti? My husband died, but I was saved. Ain't an MS. We don't believe her. So now, we didn't know of, so she, no, not she's at the fire, yeah. No, but we wouldn't have known of that case of where she said that a fire was set is exactly the equivalent of where she comes and says there was a war, because without her telling us, we wouldn't have known that there was a fire there, and yet we're saying that we don't believe her. The answer is shiny hoss, and it's different in that case. Because we tell her, that doesn't prove anything, that you don't know for sure your husband is dead. The same way as a nest happened to you and you were able to get out of there before you were overcome by the smoke, a nest may well have happened for him also. So in other words, in that case, she herself is saying that as soon as the place was filling up with smoke, she got out of there. She didn't even wait to see him dead. So, but on the other hand, by Mohammed, as Rashi says, similar to what the Rashba and other Rishonim say, that if she wanted to lie, she didn't have to tell us that there was a Mohammed in the world at all. So there's a difference between the case of the smoke, the case of the fire over here that we're saying, where she herself was telling us that she ran away before she even knew what happened to her husband, because she wanted to get out of there before she is overcome by the smoke. That doesn't necessarily follow that the same thing would be if she actually says that he died in the Mohammed. Where there, maybe again, maybe we can believe her on this Mali the Shaker, this quasi-migoy or real migoy or whatever, that she didn't have to tell us about the war at all. Or as Tosfos says, the fact that she's telling us all those details shows that what she's saying is true. Okay, Toshma, Noflo Aleinu Ovdei Chavim, what if she says that Goyim attacked us, Noflo Aleinu Listim, or robbers attacked us, who messed with Nitzalti, he was killed, but I survived, Ne'emenes, also we believe her. So we see again, we didn't know, we wouldn't have known of that attack without her telling us, and we say that we believe her. So we do say Mali the Shaker. The answer is no. The reason why that works is based on what Rav Idi says. The Amr Rav Idi, Isha Klei Zayna Aleha. A woman has her weapons on her, so there's a couple of meanings what that means, actually. Rashi and Tosfos discuss it in Avodah Zarah. One is that the goyim or the listim are more likely to rape her with the husband. They're not going to do anything, so therefore they just kill him. On the other hand, with her, they're more likely to keep her alive so they can use her for their purposes. Then another point is, Tosfos makes a point over there, not so much that, but more the point, since the men are generally the ones who fight, therefore the goyim or listim are likely to have less rahmanis on them. Because the women don't fight and are generally defenseless, therefore even these hardened people are likely to have a little rahmanis on her and leave her alive. Because after all, she's not actually going and helping to attack them. So that doesn't necessarily prove anything. Maybe that's a special case where we allow it. So since in effect Rashi says it was like a small war, then she wouldn't say the dummy, because in other words the point is, with a regular war, like Tosfos says on the previous Amud, arrows or bombs or what have you are falling indiscriminately, therefore she's gonna get out of there. It's not like they're gonna spare her any more than him. Here, on the other hand, where she has more reason to think that they're going to spare her, she's more likely to begin with to stick around to actually verify that her husband is dead, and therefore we have more reason to believe her than we would in the case of a regular Mohammed. So the Gemara tells a case. There was a person who, at the end of his wedding, a fire broke out in the chasana hall. So his wife yells out to the people, Chazu Gavroi, Chazu Gavroi, look, my husband, look, my husband. We need to go and save him. Also, they came to see what who they could save. Chazu Gavro Charucha Deshadi. They found a burnt body, a burnt man's body lying over there. Who passed to the Yada Deshadia, and there was a detached hand lying over there also from somebody else. Apparently, somebody else had come to save him, and he lost his hand. So Savar of Chiva Oven Lamema Hainu Ishinu Alon Abayis Ishinu Alon Amara. So Rav Chiva Oven thought to say that would be like the case where she said that they set the place on fire, and in other words, now you, the wife, survived, so maybe your husband did also. That body is not necessarily your husband's. Omar Rava mi dummy, but Rava says, is that really the same thing? Hosam like Omar Chazu Gavroi Chazu Gavroi. There she's not saying, look, there's my husband. Because after all, she's saying, I got out of there before the fire burned everything down. So we don't know that she didn't necessarily see her husband's body at all. She's saying that that's my husband. Also, the fact is, we have a body over here and we have a hand over here. So therefore, there's a good chance that that body or that hand, the body very likely belongs to the chassan, and the hand is somebody else who came to save him. We have very strong reason to believe that that really is him. Rav Chiva Oben would answer to that. He would say, not necessarily, because Gabra Charucha de Shadia, Ema Inishachrina Osolatsuli. On the contrary, what it might be is that burnt body over there might be somebody else who came to save, and Vachilte Nura, he himself was burnt by the fire, as far as the detached hand that's lying over there, it's possible, Nura Itlia, what may have happened is that his hand was injured, was burnt off by the fire, the Iskila Ben Mumma, so now the Chosin has a mum, now he's missing a hand, and he was so embarrassed of that he went and ran off and abandoned everything to start a new life someplace else. So therefore, Chiva Oven says, the hand itself, it's true, fine, either the body or the hand is from the chosen. It doesn't have to be the body is from the chosen.
It could be both from someone else.
They could also be both from someone. But even if we say that one of them is from the chosen, I mean, it was the big nunna, it was the chosen hole, so the likelihood is that the chosen was there, but it's very possible, says Rav Chiva Oven, that the hand is actually from the chosen, and now he's so embarrassed that he ran off and we're never going to hear of him again, but that doesn't necessarily show that he's dead. The Gemara continues. What would happen? So far, we're talking about where there was a mochama, and again, we know there was a mochama. in this place. For example, she says, my husband and I were in Ukraine. So we know there was Mohammed. And we're saying we don't believe her because of the problem with the dummy that she may assume that he's dead because how could anybody have survived that bombardment or whatever when really it's not necessarily the case. What happens if one aide comes and says that he died during the war? Do we say do we say that the general reason why we believe one aide in these kinds of cases is, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, because the milsa David Lui, it's something which is likely to be exposed one way or the other. If the husband shows up, then that completely refutes what the aide said. So therefore, the aide would not lie about it. So hachanami lemishakir. So then, in the same way over here, he's not going to lie because if the husband shows up, then it completely refutes what he says. So he's not going to say the dummy. Or maybe time of the edah mishum the he go for daikol mitzvah. Maybe the reason why in general we accept one aid when it comes to edus isha is because, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, because she's going to be very careful before getting remarried. She's not just going to go and then jump to follow that one aid because she knows the consequences if her husband does turn up alive. Well, v'hocha over here, it's not necessarily the same thing. So you have two different girsois over here. One is kiven de zimnin sanyalo ledaiko mitzvah. One is that she may not like him. Now we said in the Mishnah that there's a difference between whether there was shalom between them or whether there was tata between them. But you might have, for example, that in a case like this where she figures, you know what, there was a mohama. I have an aid on my side. So good, let me use the opportunity to get out of a marriage that I never wanted to be in anyway. And if it turns out there are consequences and I have to divorce my husband, then you know what, fine. I didn't want to stay with him anyway, and therefore lo daiko mitzvah, therefore she might not be so precise. That's one girsa. Another girsa takes out the words kiven de zimnin de sanyala and says that it's not a matter of whether she likes him or not, but just because she has one aide on her side and there was a war and she herself is thinking how could he have lived through that, how could he have lived through that bombardment, lo daiko mitzvah, so maybe she's not going to be so careful before she gets remarried. So again, now goes Agra points out over here, you get into the question, what if she says I buried him? According to the Rambam by Mohammed, that still doesn't help. According to the other postkim, it does. Anyway, so what would it be? Is one aid enough to allow her to remarry when they're saying there was Mohammed or not? So the Gemara says, Toshma, the last Mishnah of Or Masechta says, Amar Rav Akiva, Shiyaradti v'Nahavda ol Avra Hashana, when I went down to Nahavda to declare an Ivor Yer. Now, an Ivor Yer is, remember, this is, of course, when the calendar was being set up month by month by Beis Din, and then they would have to determine on each year whether it has to be a leap year. Normally, you're only allowed to do Avra Hashana, you're only allowed to do Ivor Shanim and Kviyas Hadashim in Eretz Yisrael. In this case, there was a severe persecution by the Romans going on in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva had to go to Nahavda in Bavel to do this, where the Romans wouldn't interfere with him. In fact, the Gemara in Bracha says the only reason why it worked is because Rabbi Akiva at that time was the greatest caliber Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. When he left Eretz Yisrael, there was nobody of his caliber that was left. Had there have been, then he wouldn't have been able to do that either. They would have had to stay in Eretz Yisrael and find some way to manage it. Anyway, but right now, so he went to Nahavda to declare an Ivor Yer. Matsasi Nechemya Ish Beis Dli. I met on the way a man named Nechemya Ish Beis Dli. But Omali says to me, Shemaiti Shein Masina Se Ish Beis Yisrael Al Pi Eidachat Elor of Yehuda Ben Baba. I heard, says Nechemya, that the only one of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael who allows a woman to remarry based on the testimony of one aid is only Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Everybody else is saying you require two aidim. But Namti Leikain Advarim, and Rabbi Akiva says, I said to Nechemya, indeed that's so. Omerli, so Nechemya tells me, Emor Lahem Mishni, tell the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael in my name, Atem Yodim HaMedina Azum Shubeshes V'Gayosis, you know that this country is all confused because of troops of soldiers. In other words, there are soldiers everywhere. And therefore, the Gemara is going to say in a second what the relevance is of that statement of Nehemiah's. But he says, you should know, I have the Kabbalah from Rabbi Gamliel Zokin a couple of generations ago, that you're allowed to have her remarried based on one aid. And the Mishnah goes on to say over there when Rabbi Akiva came back, then the other Chachamim corroborated that what Nechemya Ish basically is saying is correct, and that became the accepted halach. Anyway, the point is, so now, my Medinim Shubreshes Bagayosis, what... Not the Nechemya of Ezra and Nechemya. This is Nechemya Ish Beis Tzvi, a Tana from the time of Rabbi Akiva. Yeah. So my Medinim Shubreshes Bagayosis. Now let's consider, when Nechemya Ish Beis Tzvi is saying that you know this country is all confused, everyone's wandering around everywhere. What?
Chaotic,
yeah, good, thank you. It's all chaotic because of troops of soldiers. Lav, doesn't he mean to imply by that? That even though the whole place is chaotic, there are soldiers all over the place. Nevertheless, even under such circumstances, you can allow her to remarry al pi edechad. Alma edechad ve'eman. There you go. That would show that even in such a case, one aid is believed. Because again, we would say it is a milsa David aligui. If the husband shows up, then the aid is going to be completely exposed as a liar. So the way Nechemya Ish Beis Tzvi is phrasing it implies that, yeah, in such a case, we will believe the aid. But Omar Rava, or Rava says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. Ihochi, Maishna Medina Zu. In that case, why is Nechemya using the expression Medina Zu, this country? He should be saying, wherever there are gayosis, wherever there are troops of sun and units of soldiers going around and then making the place chaotic, then we accept one aid. So no, Rava says, when Nechemya mentions the gayosis, he's not saying that that's the condition, he's not saying that those are conditions under which the halacha I'm saying will apply. He just means, Atem Yodim Shemedinism Shubeshis Begayosis, you know that this Medina is all mixed up and chaotic because of soldiers. But actually, the Mishpach, Anshe Besi, Umaisi, Kami Rabbanan. I push it, I'm not able, it's not safe for me to leave the members of my household and travel to the Chachamim. So I would have gone, instead of delegating to you, Rabbi Akiva, to give them the message, I would go there myself and tell them, were it not for the fact that it's dangerous to travel. It shows, by the way, the Siddhas Nefesh of Rabbi Akiva, that he's not concerned about that, and he's going to go be Ma'ab or Shonim, even though with the Gayosis it's not safe to travel. But Nechemya Ish basically wasn't willing to take that risk. So he says, but that's why I'm delegating the message to you. But nevertheless, I have the Kabbalah that you can have Edechad. The point is, in other words, that doesn't necessarily demonstrate that Nechemya is saying his halacha, that it's meant to apply even in times of war. Maybe not. Maybe he's talking about in peacetime, you can mean Masi Isha al pi Edechad, but you should know right now is wartime and it's not safe for me to travel. So no. So the Gemara continues, Toshma, Maisa b'shnei Tamar Chachamim shayuboyim im Abba Yosi ben Simai b'sfina. It happened once that two Tamar Chachamim were traveling on a ship together with Abba Yosi ben Simai. The Tava, the ship sank. The Hisi, Rebbe, Nishasein, Apinoshin. So Rebbe allowed that there were other women on the boat, or maybe there were women on the shore who saw what happened, whatever. They testified that these two Chachamim drowned. And so Rebbe allowed that the Chachamim's wives to be married. Now, let's consider, isn't drowning the same as Mochama, because you have this Bididomi problem, that she's going to assume that his wife is going to assume, or on the face of it here, we're talking about Edom, are going to assume that he drowned when he didn't necessarily, maybe somehow he was saved. We know that when you have even 100 women testifying to something, it has in halacha only the force of one male aid. We talked about that earlier in the Masechta, when we're talking about these dinim of aiders as far as allowing a woman to be married. And we still see that Rebbe allowed the wives to be married, showing therefore that one aid at a time of Mohammed is good enough. The Gemara says, but how do you think? How are you understanding the situation that way? There's obviously something missing from the story. Mayim she'en lam seif nimbu. After all, what kind of body of water was this where you would have a ship in it? It was Mayan Chain Lam Sof. It was water that's endless, which is not literally endless, but it means, in other words, where you can't see. We're going to learn in the next paragraph, we're going to talk about the exact dinim of what kind of Adris is and isn't acceptable to allow a woman to remarry. And what, we make a major distinction over there between Mayan Sheyesh Lam Sof and Mayan Chain Lam Sof. Mayan Sheyesh Lam Sof would be, you can, there's a vantage point where you can stand and see all the sides of the body of water, of the lake, or whatever. So therefore, so if a person drowns in there, and you wait long enough that you know he couldn't have survived under the water, then that's it. You know that he's dead even if you didn't find the body, because how could he have survived? A person can't survive that long underwater. But if it's Mayan Chain Lam Sof, he could have always gotten out of the water someplace else, which was out of your vantage point. This case with Mayan Chain Lam Sof, so Mayan Chain Lam Sof Ishtei Asura, and we know, as we're going to learn in the next parak, that the wife is also in that case. Because again, so forget about women. Even if we had two Edim Kshedim that say that there was a shipwreck, and he drowned, we don't necessarily know, because he might have managed to swim underwater and get out of the water someplace else. So obviously we can't just be talking about where these women are saying that these Talmud Chachamim drowned and no body was ever found. Ela Hechidami. So the scenario must be the Ami, where the women are saying, Askinu Kamon, they actually got the bodies out of the water in front of us. The Chazinu La'alter, we saw them right away. We saw the bodies right away. The Ka'ami Simonim. And they say certain simonim that were on the body. Now, if they didn't say simonim, then we'd have to be concerned that they might be somebody else. Now that they give simonim, the lava lies some chinim ela simonim. So we're not fundamentally relying on them. We're fundamentally relying on the simonim. So that's different. That doesn't necessarily show that in a case where no body was found, in other words, we're saying we're in Mohammed, one aide comes and says that he died in Mohammed and we didn't find a body. Not necessarily is that enough to be matu him. To be matu his wife to be married. Now Rashi points out that the reason why we need simonim is, you know, on the face of it, what kind of simonim? You look at the face and you recognize him. So Rashi says, because when the body is in the water, then it changes, the face ends up looking different, so therefore it's not necessarily so noticeable. But if you have simonim on the body, which we're going to talk about that in more detail in the next paragraph, what kind of simonim we're talking about, then that's different. Those don't generally change. Tosfos actually points out that a little bit differently, that if the body stayed a considerable amount of time in the water, then that doesn't do anything. That doesn't change anything. Once you take the bodies out of the water, you have to recognize them as soon as possible, because otherwise they swell up and then they look different. Tosfos also adds that you can't just believe them based on tvias ayin. They can't, sometimes you have, you know, you recognize a person. You can't, there's no specific simon that you can say that their face, there's no specific simon that you can say in their face or in their body or whatever, but I know that person. I recognize them on sight. Here, that wouldn't be good enough, because the fact is we have the problem of the dumb. They're going to say, how many bodies are there in this water already? The likelihood is that it is these people. So again, Tosfos says, as far as the face, then no, it's not so much that being in the water for a long time changes the face. It's as soon as the bodies are pulled out of the water, you have to recognize them right away. Otherwise, otherwise once they're out of the water, they start swelling up and changing, and therefore you're not going to recognize them. Fine. So the Gemara sets aside this question now in order to talk about a different din that we might derive from the story of these two Talmid Chachamim. So we haven't really resolved the question of whether one aid the Mohammed is believed or not. So we have to be machmir, because after all we're dealing with an Issur D'oraisa. But since we mentioned this case of the two Talmid Chachamim, where the question is it really them or is it somebody else? So the Gemara gives a similar case involving dinim mamonis. Hahu gavra de'afkid shum shumi gavi chavre. There was a person who deposited for safekeeping sesame seeds by somebody else. Omalei havli shum shumi. Later on, he tells him, "Give me my sesame seeds." Omalei shekaltinu. So the other guy tells him, "You already took them. I don't owe you anything more." So he says, so the other guy says, well, Kane Havion, what do you mean? It was exactly such and such over Chavisa Romyon, and they were, and then they're in a barrel, and the barrel is still by you, and if you check that barrel, you'll find exactly as much sesame seeds, and not in number, of course, but in weight, as I'm saying. So, Omale, but the Shomer says, okay, so you're saying the amount. Didoch Shekaltinu, what you took is, what you already took your own. Bahani Achuninu, what you see over there in the barrel is my sesame seeds, and I don't owe them to you. Well, Savar of Chista Lamemer, Hainu Shnei Tamar HaHamin. Rav Chista thought to say that this is exactly the case of the two Tamar HaHamin. So what are we saying? That we said the bodies were found, the women gave simonim on those bodies, that they recognized them, and we say we accept that, because we accept that the simonim, we accept the Gemara's and the discussion, the next parent, certain simonim tend to change after death, but here we're talking about ones that don't. Tosfos also points out, anyway, we're talking about simonim mufakim, like really unique simonim that would be unique to this person.
Like a mole.
So moles actually are not necessarily simonim mufakim. We're going to talk about in the next parent, because many different people might have moles, and moles actually, the appearance of them might change after death. But imagine, I mean, you know, take as an example, although it's not really such a great example, but imagine, for example, imagine, for example, that it was one of, you know, that was one of the survivors of the concentration camps or something, and they have a number tattooed on their arm. That's a simon mufak, because every person has a unique, every person had a different number. So, so that would be. No, of course not. Well, they had. It's also in the Torah. But anyway.
They had a burn.
Whatever. The point is that you could have simonim of Hawking, right? Certain simonim which are clearly unique to that person, and not just a mole or something like that, but something where we know it's a simon mohawk, and where it's not likely to change significantly in appearance after the person died. Yeah, let's say, for example, a particular scar from a burn or whatever. Yeah. Anyway. Now, the point is, what are we saying? We accept what these women are saying. We say then that shows that these people are dead and their wives can remarry. We don't say it might so happen that there was another body that was found and that happens to have those simonim. So by the same token over here, Rav Chista is saying that the guy is giving simonim. He's saying, after all, that it's X amount of shumshamin, and they're in this barrel, and therefore that's a stronger reason to assume that it really is his. So just like with the case of the two Tamar HaChamim, we don't say that those bodies have disappeared or been eaten by the fish or whatever, and these are other bodies. Rather, we say that these are the same, the bodies are the same people who were lost. So the same thing should be over here as far as the Shum Shem. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Rav Chista, mi dami, how do you compare it? Hosim ka'ami simonim. The fact is that they're the same simonim. And as Tosva says, maybe even simonim muvhokim, pocha shumshim my simonim is for who. Here, what kind of simon can there be on shumshim? And one sesame seed looks exactly like another. So my simonim is for who. Udekaoma came the cane havian. I, he's saying it was X amount. Maybe emu chushbonu islami. It could be he punked happened to guess the right amount. Not necessarily is that considered a valid simon. Tosfos points out, first of all, it has to be that the original Pikadon was given with Edim, because if there weren't Edim to begin with anyway, the Shomer would have a nigger. He could say there was no Pikadon here in the first place, you sold them. So we have to be talking about where there were Edim to begin with, where he was marketed by him. And just because the guy is saying that there was X amount, then that's not considered a valid sin. Now, Tosfos points out that sometimes the weight or the amount of something can be a sin. In Eilam Metzias, for example, we talk about that if a person says, for example, that I lost a saw of grain, for example, then that's a valid sin. But over here, Tosfos says the difference is that many people, when they're storing away sesame seeds, store them away in certain quantities. So therefore, the fact that he says a certain quantity is not necessarily a sin. So therefore, sort of Chista says, I'm still sticking with what I'm saying. Rava is saying to Rav Chista that therefore it's not a valid comparison to the case. Maybe in the Shnei Tamar HaChamim we accept that they're dead, but not necessarily with the Shum Shemin. Do we have to say that necessarily it's the same one? It's very possible the Shomer is correct and he doesn't owe them because these are his own Shum Shemin. So Amale to Makshisha bar Rav Chisda Rav Ashi. So now Makshisha, the son of Rav Chisda, asks Rav Ashi. Tosfos, in a few places in Shas, you have Makshisha and you have Mal Yenuka. Rashi and Tosfos in some places discuss that they were both sons of Rav Chisda, and so Rashi learns that the younger one was called Mal Yenuka and the older one Makshisha, and Tosfos says maybe the other way around, actually. Maybe the one who was born when Rav Chisda was younger, and he himself, therefore, was the older brother, is called Makshisha, and the other one is, he's Mal Yenuka, because he was born when his father was still youngish, and the other one is Makshisha. Anyway. Whether they're actually the sons of Rav Chisda is a little hard to say anyway. I mean, Rav Chisda passed away some 60 years before Rav Ashi became Rosh Hashiva, so they would have had to be quite old, but anyway. Yeah, anyway. So he asked Rav Ashi, Umichai, maybe, I don't know. So Umichai Shinan Shemapinon, so do we, Bechlal, have to be concerned that he might have moved them from, that he might have emptied them out from one barrel and put them into another? Shouldn't we say that if it's the same barrel, then the pashkus is the same thing? Well, it's not. We learn in a Mishnah, Motzav Kli V'Kosavol of Kuf. If a person finds a keli and it's labeled with the letter Kuf, then we say the contents of it, we have to assume, are Kurban, meaning Rashi says Hekish. Mem, if you find it labeled Mem, then it means Meiser. If you find it labeled Dalid, then it means Zimua. It's a mixture of Cholin and Truma, which the Truma wasn't able to be bottled, and only Koyanim to eat it. The Mishnah actually brings differently. The Mishnah that this is quoted from actually says that the Dalid would stand for Dumai. Anyway, Test Tevel, if you find the Kaili labeled with a test, then it means that the contents of Tevel, Toth Truma, and if it's labeled Toth, then it means that it contains Truma. And why would they do that? Why wouldn't they write out the full word? In times of danger, when the goyim have outlawed mitzvahs, then people were afraid to write out the word Truma, because if you're caught with such a keli, then you're caught red-handed keeping mitzvahs. So therefore, they would label it just with a tough. And if soldiers or police come and search you, and they find that you could say tough is my initial, or it's the initial of the guy I bought it from, or whatever, you could always find that excuse. So the point is that we don't assume that maybe at one time the keli had Meiser in it, Meiser Sheni, that is, and now they took it out and what's in there is Chulin. No, we assume that what's in there is Meiser Sheni, or Korban, or Truma, or what have you. So we see that we assume whatever was in the keli before is what's in there now. Well, by the same logic, then, if this guy comes for his sesame seeds, and he's saying they're in that barrel, on that same barrel I gave you, why would we assume Why would there be a possibility that there were actually different sesame seeds, that he emptied out the barrel and returned the sesame seeds to him, and now this is other seeds that are in there? Why wouldn't he say that it's much more likely it is the same sesame seeds? Now, Tosfos says the fact is it is very common to move them from one barrel to another. So with dinim mominis, we're going to say that but on the other hand, it is very common to move them from one barrel to another, but we still seem to be saying, according to Rava, we're assuming different sesame seeds, but according to Rav Chisda, not. So we see that we don't usually move things from one container to another. But Ravina says to Rav Ashi, on the contrary, do we say that we're not choshesh that he moved them? Ema sefer. But look at the continuation of that same Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni, where it continues, Rav Yosi Omer, afilu motza chavis v'kosvah le'at truma, even if a person finds a barrel labeled with the full word truma, so maybe if it was labeled tough, you could say maybe it's not necessarily, maybe it's the guy's initial or something. Here it's labeled with the full word truma, and still Rav Yosi says, hare l'chulin, nevertheless the contents are chulin, shani Omer, shtapet hoyamole truma, because we have every reason to say that last year it was full of truma, upina, and then he emptied it out, and now what's in there is chulin. So yes, there is a high likelihood that we move things from one barrel to another. So yes, there is a good chance then that, like Rava says, that the guy is telling the truth, that he emptied out the barrel, he returned the guy's shrum from it, and these are other shrum. And the point is, though, relating to the machlokas of the Chachamim and Rav Yosi in that Mishnah, why would the Chachamim say that automatically, if the barrel is labeled Toth, is it automatically Truma, when Rav Yosi is pointing out that it could just as well be that last year it contained Truma and this year it contains Cholin? No, the answer would be both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi would say it's very possible that he emptied it out. The Machlokes would be as follows. Mar Sabah, the Tanakama holds in Isa de Pinohu, if in fact he emptied out the barrel and what's in it now is not Truma anymore, Michfer have a Kofar, he would have wiped away the tuff. He would have removed the tuff so that people don't in the future think that it's Truma. So therefore, if you find it now, labeled tuff, labeled with full word Truma, we have every right to believe that it really is Truma. Now, the word kofar, by the way, when we talk about kapara, slachon, machalon, or kapralonu, literally Rashi points out in a few places that the word kofar literally means to wipe away. So it means, so there it means to wipe away the avera, here it means to wipe away the mark. So therefore, the idach, on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi counters with that, and he says, first of all, emer ishtaluya ishtali, first of all, he might have forgotten to remove the label when he emptied out the contents and refilled it. Inami the panchia shabke, or he might have left it for panchia, which means to store it away. In other words, Rashi says that he might have been doing like this. He might figure, if I don't label the barrel, then anybody in my household is going to think they're free to take from it. I want to make sure that what's in this barrel, that nobody takes it. Therefore, I'm going to leave the label Truma on it. That way, people are going to say to themselves, anybody who comes over, wait, that's Truma, let me leave it alone. But really,
Truma to the people who I gave you a barrel of.
So we're talking about, in other words, forget about the case of the sesame seeds. In general, we have a person has a barrel in his household where at one point he had Truma in it. Now he emptied out the Truma, gave it to the Kohenim. Nevertheless, he might still want to leave the label Truma on there, even though now he's putting Fulin in there. He himself will know that in fact it's Fulin, but he figures this way other people in his household will think that it's Truma, and that way they won't touch it. That way he has a secret stash, basically. Yeah. Well, you have to empty it. No, you don't have to wash it out. I mean, it depends. If it was liquids, then yeah. But if it was solids, then you just basically you clean. There's a Mishnah in Trumas or Maisus or something that says something along the lines. You don't have to literally take out every grain. You just have to clean it out the way you would normally clean out a bin that contains grain or something where you don't mind if there's a few grains left, and then you can refill it with fulin. So here it would be the same thing. There are, in fact, actually some of the mafoshim on the pasuk. You know, when it says that Pare renamed Yosef Tzafnas Paneach, and Rashi says whether Tzafnas means hidden, and Paneach means that he's able to figure out, which is why in modern Hebrew the Paneach means to crack a code or something. So it means that Yosef is able to crack hidden secrets. Some of the mafoshim relate the word Paneach to our word over here, Panchia, meaning that he's the one who knows how to hide away treasures, because he hid away treasures of grain for the Mitzrayim. So Rabbi Yossi says just because you find it labeled tough or truma doesn't necessarily show that the contents are truma. Anyway, though, applying that to our case of the sesame seeds, where the one person is saying those are my sesame seeds and the other one is saying not necessarily. So that they're mine. So they're saying they're my sesame seeds. I return you yours. So the Mishnah that we're quoting from Maisa Sheni wouldn't necessarily bear on that, because it might well be Chashin and Shema Pinon. They both would agree with the basic concept that Kalim are sometimes emptied out and refilled. So the Machlokas would strictly be, if you have a label on it that says Tuf or Truma, do we follow that label or not? But when there's no label on it, then yes, the Shomer has every right to say that I return you your sesame seed, and these are other ones because you have no actual simen on them. In fact, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, who in turn brings from Yerushalmi, that tells a case where two of the Chachamim, Rabbi Yona and Rabbi Yossi, were partners. They both owned a barrel of wine jointly. And then later on, when Rabbi Yona passed away, Rabbi Mani wanted to take ownership of the ones that are labeled with Rabbi Yona's name. So they weren't partners in one barrel of wine. They were partners in barrels. They had a wine cellar or whatever with barrels, some of which were labeled with Rabbi Yona's name and others with Rabbi Yossi's name. So now when Rabbi Yona passed away, then Armani came to take all the ones that have Rabbi Yona's name on them, and Rabbi Yossi tells him that actually he since sold them to me. And again, the fact that they're still labeled Rabbi Yona doesn't mean anything, because you don't always remove the labels.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I think would be important, if I gave you a barrel of sesames,
yeah,
whose barrel is it? did I give you the sesames or did I give you the barrel?
Obviously, if you gave the barrel, then you have to then have to return me the barrel as well. If you're preposterous, we're talking about that you brought sesame in bags or something and then we transferred it into my barrel, right? Okay, so the Gemara goes on, talking further about this question of the identity of people. So we said before, we had the two Talmidei Chachamim whose bodies were pulled out of the water, and the question is whether it is the same, whether it is the same bodies. So the Gemara says, Yitzchak Reish Kobusa, Bar Achse did a Bibi Haba. Yitzchak Reish Kobusa was the nephew of Rabibi. Haba Ka'ozel, Mikutava Laspanya. He was traveling from Kutava to Aspanya, Beshachiv, and he passed away. Now, a couple of things over here is, first of all, on the, where is Kurtava and where is Aspania? On the face of it, and many Rishonim explain it this way, Kurtava is Cordova in Spain, and Aspania is Spain. So in that case, then, that he's going from Kurtava to Aspania would mean he's traveling from there to a different area in Spain. In which case, actually, the Rosh says, now the Gemara is going to discuss over here the question, with maybe Madrid didn't exist at that point, but yeah, it could be a different part of Spain. I mean, if you look on a map, you'll find that Spain at that point was divided into a number of different Roman provinces. So yeah, it could be that he traveled from one province to another within Spain. That's the point, right? So with that said, there are some historians who argue that maybe not, maybe Cordova and Aspania are areas in or near Babel. Because one of the questions is also, when we say Yitzchak Reish Kobusa, and we're going to ask the question whether there might be two, and there's only one Reish Kobusa at a time. The Reish Kobusa is, first of all, the leader of the Jews in Babel, so there's not going to be more than one at a time. And second of all, if he's the Reish Kobusa in Babel, what's he doing traveling all the way in Spain, which is thousands of miles away from Babel? So first of all, as far as the first question, the Rosh says maybe not, Reish Kobusa was not necessarily his title, that may have just been part of his name. His name was Yitzchak Reish Kobusa. Why? And his parents named him that. Maybe they had hopes for him to be a Reish Kobusa. Maybe he worked in the family of the Reish Kobusa and in the household or whatever, and therefore people nicknamed him that. Whatever the case. And as far as the Kurtava to Aspania, again, some people want to argue that these are not places in Spain per se, but rather near Babel. Anyway, whatever. The Shachiv, so he passed away.
Paris, Texas.
Yeah, like out there, yeah, different Parises, different whatever. Another possibility, though, is maybe the same way as there was a Reish Kobusa in Babel. Maybe Jews in other places had their own local Reish Kobusa. So maybe he's the local Reish Kobusa in Spain. Anyway, Veshachiv, so he passed away. Shochom Mehosam, so they sent a message from there to Babel. They said, Yitzchak Reish Kobusa ba'achsid rabibi habaka ozo mikurtav ala aspami Veshachiv. So they sent a message giving all the details. But now the question we have is, mi chayshin of a tre Yitzchak ba'ilod? Do we have to be concerned that there might be two people of the same name? Now, Rashi explains, there is sometimes, if we have a chazaka, that there are two people of that same name in the city, no question that just because we have such a message is not good enough. The question is, where we don't have such a chazaka, do we still have to be concerned that maybe there's another Yitzchak Reish Kobusa that we don't know about? The Oruch Haner points out, I mean, with all the details over here, I mean, even if you say there's two Yitzchak Reish Kobusas, how likely is it that both of them are the nephew or the nephews of the Bibi? How likely it is that both of them were traveling from Kurtava to Aspania? So as far as the first part, traveling, the Rosh points out, okay, it's not like the gates are closed. Many people could be traveling from point A to point B. But as far as the second part, the Oruch Haner says, you're right. Maybe the message didn't include all those details. The message included that Yitzchak Reish Kobusa passed away and people were inferring that must be the Yitzchak Reish Kobusa, who's the nephew of Rabibi, and whom we know is traveling from Kurtava to Aspania. So now the question is that really the case? Is it possible that there's another Yitzchak Reish Kobusa that we have to be concerned that it might have been him? So Abaya Amal Chashin and Rava Amal Chashin. So Abaya says we do have to be concerned. We can't necessarily allow his wife to remarry on the basis of that Eidos unless we find out that it really was him. Rava Amar Loi Chashinan, and Rava says we don't have to be careful, we don't have to worry about that unless we have a chazaka, a known chazaka, that there is another Yitzchak Reish Kobusa. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaya Menor Aminallah, so where do I get this from that we should have to be concerned about such a thing? Dahu Gita de Ishtakach bin Nahuda, there was once a get found in the city of Nahuda, and the woman is claiming, I was previously received that get, give it back to me so that I have proof that I can remarry. The Uksiv, and the get set in it, at the side of Klunia, of the city of Klunia. Rashi says the Tzad Klunia Shem Ir, which brings up an interesting point that the post can discuss. Can you write a get and say that we're writing near such and such a city? Do you have to actually write the name of the city that you're in when you're writing the get? So one possibility is, in fact, So one possibility is you could, and then Sad Plunia would mean near the city of Plunia. The other possibility is that actually maybe Rashi means to say that the name of the city itself was Sad Plunia. So in that case, you're saying we're standing now in Sad Plunia and writing this get, and he says, Ano Andrulinoi Nahauda, I Andrulinoi from Nahauda. On the side of it here, it brings a girsa that the Rosh and then some other Rishonim have, not Andrulinoi, but David Bar Nihiloi, which according to that girsa, this would be the only figure in Shas, other than David HaMelech, of course, who bears the name David. It seems that you have, you know, David is a very common name now, but it seems that in the times of Chazal, it was actually very rare.
Name our kids after Chazal.
We there's some names of Chazal that we use, for example, Abba, but yeah, there's a lot of them that are fallen out of. Okay, names go in and out of fashion. Anyway, so you say, Petorius or Terachis is pointed into sea. So I've divorced and sent away my wife, Poinus. So that was what it said in the get. The Shocha of the Shmuel, the Kamed, the Shmuel, the Kamed, the Behud and Asiya. Now, Avur the Shmuel sent the question to the Behud and Asiya in Eretz Yisrael. Do we have to be concerned that maybe there's another Andrulinoi, that get might be from him, and then this wife, and then this woman who's claiming it was not actually his wife, but somebody else. The Shalachle, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya answered Avodah Shmuel and said, Tibodik Nahauda Kula. You have to check the entire Nahauda and see if there's another Andrulinoi over there, besides for this woman's husband. So therefore, so Abaya says, you see from that we do have to be concerned. Now, we had no reason before that thing that there are two people in the town named Andrulinoi or David Bar Nihiloi, and yet Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying you have to check. By the same token, if we're told a report that Yitzchak Reish Kabulsa has died, we don't know for sure that he's the only Yitzchak Reish Kabulsa. We have to find out. The Rava Amar, on the other hand, Rava counters and says, Im Issa, if that were really a concern, what do you mean, Ned? You check only now, Dar, you bought a Kola Olam, by the way. Then Rabbi Yehuda Nasir would have had to say that he has to check the entire world. There might have been another Andrulinoi who was visiting Nahauda. When he says, I know Andrulinoi Nahauda, it doesn't mean that I live in Nahauda. It means that I'm in Nahauda. So he could have been visiting from someplace else and left. Ella, so obviously the answer is you don't really have to check at all. We know there's only, we only know of one Andrulinoi, the ex-husband of this woman who's claiming that this is her get. So when Avur Shmuel asked the question, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, out of respect for Avur Shmuel, said check the whole Nahauda. In other words, in order that people shouldn't think, or Avur Shmuel himself shouldn't think, you know, I asked a stupid question. Why did I even ask the question? So out of respect for him, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya pretends that, yeah, you know what, your question has validity. Find out if there's another man of that name in Nahauda. But really, Rava says it's not really necessary unless we have a chazaka that there are two people in town with that same name, then we don't have to worry about it.
It seems like they don't have a telephone book.
Yeah, of course, they don't have a telephone book or anything. Yeah, of course. Okay, so we'll continue that discussion. Whatever it is, the point is you have to ask and make sure that there's another person, of that same name. But anyway, according to Rava, you don't even really need to do that. So we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and then go further into that.